Welcome to 2. In the first, we took up some initial comments and suggestions about the relationship of God and evil. We looked at the biblical notion of God's hatred of evil and developed that idea. We also looked at a definition of evil and looked at that with a certain amount of scrutiny. We want to piggyback on that discussion in many ways. What I'll do now is look at the concepts of intrinsic and extrinsic evils and goods, intrinsic neutrals, and intrinsic or intrinsically indifferent states of affairs. I also want to introduce the concept of an organic whole or organic unity. Those two terms, organic whole and organic unity, will be used interchangeably. I'll look at some examples of organic wholes, after I define it, that are important for theodicy. Then I'll take up what I call the non-negotiable concept of God and the contents thereof. Then some important philosophical concepts near the end of the tape, especially the notion of contradiction and impossibility. Let's turn then to discuss the notion of intrinsic and extrinsic goods and evils. What do we mean when we say that a thing is intrinsically good? Well, this is a definition. This is what I mean when I say something's intrinsically good. Some state or thing is good in itself. Okay, if something's intrinsically good, it means that that state or thing is good in itself. There's something about the very configuration of the thing or that state that makes it good, something desirable in itself. Now, at the end of tape one, I started to define this notion of states of affairs. And as I said there, the idea is just the way that the world is. You refer to a certain way that the world or some possible world is. A state of affairs is just a gathering of states and things together in a little picture, and you're referring to that picture. The state of affairs of the Cubs beating the Atlanta Braves last night, finally, after several tries. That's a state of affairs. And that's an actual one. They really did play them last evening. The state of affairs of a purple people eater hunching down over my right shoulder. That's a state of affairs. It's not actual, thank goodness. But the important thing here is that it is a state of affairs, whether or not it's actual. So long as it's possible, it does exist in a possible world, as we defined it at the end of tape one. Now, how do we find out things that are intrinsically good or intrinsically evil? Well, there was a philosopher, a British philosopher, by the name of G.E. Moore, George Edward Moore, who published a famous book that we're going to be making use of. It was entitled Principia Ethica, Principles of Ethics, translated, but the Latin title Principia Ethica. And the work came out in 1903 and really revolutionized a number of facets of the study of ethical theory in the 20th century. But Moore came up with this method called the method of isolation. And the way that you use this method is as follows. You imagine a world in which only a certain thing existed, namely the thing in question, whether or not that thing or state is in fact intrinsically good. So we're imagining a world in which only that thing or some state in question exists. Would we commend the existence of that world? If so, then that thing is good in itself. It's intrinsically good. If not, then it's not intrinsically good. I think the way to go at this point is to give a list of intrinsic goods. The list is not meant to be exhaustive, but only to point us in the right direction. Okay, it's a list mostly agreed upon by ethicists. We will use this language and these concepts for this course, so it's good to make a list and get a feel for intrinsic goods. Here's a list of intrinsic goods. Happiness, pleasure, good intentions, the exercise of virtue, good character, and love. There's something about the very configuration, something internal to someone acting with a good character, or with the virtue, say, of acting with a good character, regardless of outside circumstances. If one acts with a good intention, we consider that thing to be internally or intrinsically good. Now let's try this method of isolation. Imagine a world in which all you have is a garden, and a gardener who tends the garden, and the gardener takes great pleasure in working the garden, and he has every good intention to keep the garden in tip-top shape. Well, we'd say, probably, that we would commend that world, that we would prefer it to exist than not, or we would prefer it to nothing at all. That world is better to exist than not. That's what Moore was getting at when he said, by the method of isolation, that we would judge that world to be intrinsically good. That is, that that world's existing is something that we would commend, we would recommend it. We would prefer it to exist than not to exist. Now, I realize that our example is sort of odd in the sense that in this imagined world, the only agent that exists there is this gardener to which I have referred. But we might consider that to be really an impossible sort of world, because as theists, we believe that God exists necessarily in all possible worlds. At least many theists hold that account. If the gardener is happy and has good intentions, we would not prefer that it not exist, but we would prefer that it did exist, other things being equal. So we're just trying to give an example that shows Moore's method of isolation in action. Namely, it shows that a human life's existing, other things being equal, is better to exist than not to exist. That is, it's intrinsically good that a human exists rather than not, other things being equal. Of course, we would prefer worlds in which we existed over a world in which a mere gardener existed, but those things being understood in our example, we're at least, I think, gaining ground on our understanding of the method, Moore's method, of isolation. By the way, Moore is capital M-O-O-R-E, G-E Moore, two O's, R-E. Now, how about a list of intrinsic evils? Okay, we've looked at intrinsic goods. How about intrinsic evils? After you get used to the shorthand, in your notes, if you do take extensive notes, you may want to use the symbols IG for intrinsic good and IE for intrinsic evil, IN for intrinsic neutral, and I suppose II for intrinsically indifferent states of affairs, which we'll get to as we go. Remember, we mean by IE, or intrinsic evil, that a thing or state is bad in itself. Well, I say remember that. In effect, remember that if something's intrinsically good, the thing is good in itself. And so if something, on the other hand, is intrinsically evil, that means that that thing is bad in itself, regardless of the consequences of that thing's existing, and so forth. How about a list of intrinsic evils? The following is a list, and it's somewhat akin to our list of intrinsic goods. Here's a list of six intrinsic evils. misery, pain, bad intentions, the exercise of vice, evil character, and hatred. The ideal here is that when there is a pain in our bodies, or when a loved one is in misery, what do we do? Consider for a moment. We do everything in our power to alleviate that evil, that misery, that pain. We don't wait around. We take immediate action, if our abilities permit that. We take immediate action to alleviate pain and misery. This is a sign, I think a clear sign, that we take pain and misery to be intrinsically evil and bad, for we try to alleviate those things without a second thought about their existence. There are two other concepts, then, that I referred to just a bit ago, intrinsic neutrals and intrinsic indifference. Something is intrinsically neutral if that thing is neither intrinsically good nor intrinsically evil. Okay, so something's intrinsically neutral, for example, if it's simply the denial that a state of affair is intrinsically good, or the denial that a state of affair is intrinsically evil. Okay, you're used to the language of denial in logic and in philosophy. To deny a proposition is simply to say it is not the case that dot dot dot, whatever the proposition is. If I say Indiana right now is completely flooded with water, okay, there's a statement. The denial of that is it's not the case that Indiana is completely flooded with water right now. Okay, so to deny a proposition P, you simply say it's not the case that P. So what we're saying is that something, a state or thing, is intrinsically neutral if that thing is neither intrinsically good nor intrinsically evil. That is, it's a denial that a state of affair is intrinsically good, or the denial that a simple state of affair is intrinsically evil. Take this example. I think it will explain what we're up to here. For example, a person's lacking happiness. Okay, take some person and say that that person lacks happiness. We said above that happiness is an intrinsic good. Now, if a person lacks happiness, it doesn't follow that the person is unhappy. We could well be, or that person could well be, in a neutral state, right? Intrinsically neutral. If a person lacks happiness, he is in an intrinsically neutral state. Okay, take a second example I think is helpful. The person on the street, okay? You and your friend are walking down the street, and you both see this person coming towards you, and your friend turns to you and says, "Do you love that person?" And having never met or seen this person before and not knowing who it is, you say, "No, you know, I've never met that person." And your friend asks you then, "Oh, do you hate them then?" And you say, no, I simply do not love them, nor do I hate them. I've never even so much as met the person. Had the opportunity and inclination to meet this person. How could I hate or love them having never met them? Okay, so just because some person Jones does not love another person Brown, that doesn't necessarily mean that Jones hates Brown. It could well be an intrinsically neutral state of affairs of not loving Brown. That's not evil, necessarily at least. It just is a lack of an intrinsic good. Okay, I hope you see the difference there. Consider the examples, and hopefully that will become clear. Take now this fourth idea of intrinsic states of affairs. What's an intrinsically indifferent state? Well, that's where a state a thing or a state of affairs, and its opposite is intrinsically neutral. Okay, now how does that work out? Well, I think an example is really handy here. It's an example first used by Roderick Chisholm, and I'll give Chisholm's example. The existence of a rock, okay, take the existence of a rock, some little pebble out in the yard, say. Now, whether or not that rock, that pebble exists, it does not really add anything substantial to the value of this world, right? Just some little teeny tiny microscopic rock. Whether or not that rock exists adds little substantial to the value of this world. Okay? So it's intrinsically indifferent whether or not the rock, this little pebble in the yard, exists. If the rock exists, it contributes no value to the world. If it doesn't exist, it contributes neither value nor disvalue to the world. Its not being there contributes neither value nor disvalue. Okay? So what this example of the rock shows is that some states of affairs are intrinsically indifferent. Whether the state or its opposite is the case, no value is added to the world. And thus, the world, if those sorts of things, states of affairs exist, also includes intrinsically indifferent states of affairs. So, what's another way to think of it? Some states of affairs are actual, but their being actual does not add value to the world. The world obviously lacks a great deal of states of affairs that are non-actual. They never come to be real, never come to be actualized in the world. And the world does not lose value for their not be becoming actual. Those are truly intrinsically indifferent states of affairs. Both the state and its opposite is intrinsically neutral. I have various motives, let me say, for introducing these terms. It's good, it seems to me, to be able to distinguish things. As every good philosopher knows and practices, for example, Thomas Aquinas said that whenever a philosopher is in the corner, the true thing to do is not give up, but to be able to marshal a distinction. You make a distinction. And if you read Aquinas' Summa Theologica, at least part of it, in this huge work, you'll see that Aquinas was a master at making distinctions. Now, Chisholm and others have brought up a point which is, it has just a modicum of philosophical interest. I think it's an interesting observation. And it's this. No matter what world God creates, there will be, of course, many states of affairs that will not be actualized, real, become actual in that world. If that's the case, this follows. Take some state of affairs S. Say Jack Nicklaus is winning $100 million on the professional golf circuit. As far as I know, that's not going to come to pass in this world. Nicholas has won his millions, but not his hundreds of millions. Now, in some other world, he does, presumably, win $100 million. But in this world, he doesn't. Chisholm's and others, their point is that in this world, the opposite state of affairs obtains. Namely, Nicholas is not winning $100 million in this world. That state of affairs does obtain. Now here's the rub. If some state of affairs is not contained in the actual world, then the opposite of that state of affairs is contained or will obtain. Okay? If some state of affairs does not obtain, then the opposite, right, the denial of that state of affairs obtains. But if we consider winning $100 million to be a good, then it's not being the case that it is present in our world, then that's the very thing we're talking about when we talk of an intrinsically neutral thing. Right? Nicholas's winning his $100 million is a good thing, but it doesn't happen in this world. And therefore, an intrinsically neutral state of affairs occurs. Namely, Nicholas is not winning $100 million, American dollars, on the professional golf circuit. So, no matter what world God creates, there will be many, some would say, and it seems true, infinite numbers of states of affairs that will be intrinsically neutral. Sometimes we talk about an omnipotent, omniscient, morally perfect God. Wouldn't it be the case that a being like that would just load up the world with good, just brimming over with goodness, and nothing would be intrinsically evil, nothing would be intrinsically indifferent, nothing intrinsically neutral? But like I said, this may be just a modicum of philosophical interest, but look, anytime you deny that a good state of affairs exists or is made actual in the world, then what we're saying, in effect, is that those things are an intrinsically neutral state of affairs. It is, for the most part, lacking positive value. I mean, if we look at the world, most of the world is things not being the case. Right? Nicholas only makes a certain dollar value. There's an infinite number of dollar values that he doesn't make in this world, in his career. Therefore, there's all sorts of intrinsically neutral affairs that does, in fact, attain. So, no matter what world God creates, it simply won't be brimming over with pure goodness. There must be a whole lot of neutral states of affairs that are actual, always actual, with respect to that world. For example, in this world, God gave me an interest in philosophy and theology. In another world, I am a concert pianist, even better than Van Cliburn. In yet another world, I'm a bumbling mechanic. But it's not the case that I'm a mechanic in this world. It's also not the case that I'm a concert pianist. And so the idea is that those things not coming to pass are states of affairs that are intrinsically neutral in this world, that contribute no value to this world in any positive sense. So, the world has an infinite number of intrinsically neutral states of affairs, and probably an infinite number of intrinsically indifferent states of affairs. It must be that way. On the other side of intrinsic goods and evils, you have extrinsic goods and evils. Some philosophers, including Roderick Chisholm, call these instrumental goods and instrumental evils. And it's meant to be synonymous, okay? Instrumental good, extrinsic good. Okay, same thing. Instrumental evil, extrinsic evil. Those are synonymous. Let's say that something is extrinsically good if it is productive of something that is intrinsically good, or it's good as a means to something intrinsically good. If something is productive of something else intrinsically good, then we call that thing useful. It has utility. It is good as a means. On the other hand, if something's extrinsically evil, it is productive of something that is intrinsically evil. It is evil as a means to something intrinsically evil. If something is productive of evil, then it lacks utility. We say that the thing is harmful. It has disutility. Okay? For example, a good pen writes well. It doesn't drip ink on your hand. Doesn't cramp the hand. It produces good letter writing. It's balanced well. Sits nicely in your hand. We call this an extrinsic good. It's not intrinsically good, but it brings about something intrinsically good. Good penmanship, the pleasure of using a good instrument. The same can be said for something that is intrinsically evil, a bad pen. Okay. It causes you to have ink all over your clothes and hands. It cramps your hands. It lightens up and darkens up in writing, you know, seemingly at random. That's an extrinsic evil, evil as a means. The question that is probably raising in your mind at this point is this. How are we going to deal with good and evils when they are all complex, mixed together? How will we deal with goods and evils in a wider state of affairs? Now, this is a very good question. This is a problem that many different ethicists have tried to deal with. Roderick Chisholm, for one, has dealt with this sort of problem, as well as G.E. Moore and other philosophers. On the one hand, we might think that goods and evils balance off one another. Okay, the key term here is to balance off, good and evil balancing off one another. Okay, for example, imagine two people. One person is in a relatively innocent, pleasurable state. Another is in a relatively innocent, displeasurable state. Say that the pain and pleasure are relatively equal in intensity. For example, the evil is -1 from imagine on some arbitrary scale of evil. 0 is neutral, and +1 is a relatively small amount of pleasure. In a state of affairs in which you have a 1 plus 1 and a -1, you'd have 0 in sum. We'd say that they are pretty much equal, that they balance off each other. If we have one person in a +1 state, a little bit of pleasure, and a person in a -1, just a bit of displeasure, we might say that they balance off each other, so that in sum, in our summation of the wider state of affairs, which includes both people, we might say that the sum is in fact 0. What would we say, though, in a state of affairs in which we have relative equals, but they do not balance one another out? These sorts of things, of course, do happen, and so we ask that question. So the possibility I'm envisaging here is when you have, say, a state of affairs which is -3, and another one nearby which is +3, but we know for a fact that in the wider state of affairs, including both of those, the +3 and the -3, the sum is not 0. It's some other figure. And we know that to be the case. How are we to deal with those sorts of goods and evils?